AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Live from Election Day in the U.S. of A via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Senator Jerry Moran from Kansas. Then we've got Scott Shelady from the Cow Guy Group. And right after the news, seed and production editress Sonia Begeman. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, we are here. It is Election Day, and I have officially voted. I've got my sticker.
Okay, great.
Surprise, surprise, you know, the folder that you put the ballot in as you take it to the machine to slide it in.
Yes.
Normally, you set that folder to the side. You get to keep it this year.
Oh, okay.
There's a huge box of pens that, of course, it's one person, one pen, and take it with you when you leave.
No kidding.
Yeah. So that's a little bit different, but the process is still very much the same. They've got us the booths more spread out than what they normally would be, but all a smooth process in my precinct. So I'm good.
I've been stoking the fires of forward progress in the workplace this morning. So I haven't had a chance to get out and vote yet. But as soon as we're done here, I'm headed straight over to my local polling facility. I'll report back this afternoon.
Excellent. Yeah, I think I was like eighth in line. And the only reason that there was a line at all in any waiting once the poll opened is because, of course, you got to check in, you've got to verify, and everything's got to get done there. So it's all a process, Hey, now, by the way, we're going to have Dr. Michael Langemeyer from Purdue University on with us at the end of the show. We're going to talk about the ag economy barometer.
Yes, and I talked about that, was that 2 weeks ago, I think, when the September numbers were startlingly high and optimism was really taking off. This one's a doozy, bro.
Oh, yeah. Very much.
Yeah,
it's a new record not only on the overall index, but on the forward-looking portion of the of the barometer as well. So we'll get into the details of that with Michael coming up here at the end of the show.
Great.
In between now and then, we've got a fantastic show. Good grief. Senator Moran, Scott Shelady. Wow. Let's go, man.
Well, let's talk about highlights from USDA's crop condition update. Week ended November 1. Corn, 82% harvested. Beans, 87% harvested. Cotton, 52% harvested, 37% of the cotton crop rated good to excellent. Winter wheat, 89% planted, 71% emerged, 43% good to excellent. Chip.
Yeah, a little bit of improvement in the HRW country because of the rain, but it's still way, way, way below the five-year average on the amount of the HRW crop rated good to excellent.
Well, some 99.7 million early votes had been cast in person or by mail as of Monday night. That's about 72.3% of the entire turnout in 2016 and represents about 40% of all Americans who can participate in the U.S. election. The rest of the population will decide today on whether Republican President Donald Trump or Democratic rival Joe Biden will control the White House for the next 4 years. It's a big day, buddy. And finally, we can move on to Christmas ads instead of political ads.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right. Absolutely. I know what you mean. We're going to talk Election Day markets with Scott Schellady, but we're also going to try to put some perspective on the overall vote. And I'll tell you this right now. I'm watching the Senate race closer than I am the White House race. I hope.
Well, the likelihood of a stimulus package passing during the upcoming congressional lame duck session appears dim. And watchers say if Joe Biden takes the presidency, action on the matter will not likely take place until after the January inauguration. A Wall Street Journal article highlights the perils faced by the embattled restaurant industry, which managed to recover slightly from spring lockdowns by offering outdoor dining to patrons. Of course, logic would lead us to suggest that option will likely come to an end as temperatures drop in the northern states and coronavirus cases surge. The Journal notes the threat of businesses going under and employees losing jobs if stimulus money is not forwarded soon. I tie those two together. Dude, we've got to get something going on this. Otherwise, businesses are going to begin to fail here.
Oh, yeah.
Even more so than already have. Yeah.
There is no question about it. This is the big reason that there are some estimates out there that up to 80% of restaurants are going out of business due to COVID. It's crazy.
Well, meat processors are eyeing technologies, including 3D scanners and automated cutting, as that industry looks to accelerate processing lines and limit the spread of coronavirus among its workers. Meanwhile, Walmart says it will be backing away from plans to deploy 6-foot-tall robots that would scan store shelves and help maintain inventory. Get this. Here's a novel approach. The company has scrapped a contract with Bossa Nova in favor of simply relying on its human workforce.
Right.
Is that right. Is that a novel idea already?
I don't
Are
think
we there?
It is. But it, what it... When I see something, see an item like this, Davis, I think to myself, we're going to be looking at ways of getting rid of the vulnerabilities in the supply chain. If those are vulnerabilities, then we're going to get rid of them.
All right. Well, real quickly, Deborah Birx, the White House coronavirus response coordinator, wrote in an internal memo that officials were too focused on preventing lockdowns and not stopping COVID-19, saying, quote, "We are entering the most concerning and most deadly phase of this pandemic." This as European governments are turning to mass testing and more lockdowns. Chip.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Sonia Begum in. She is the seeds and production editor at Farm Journal. How are you this morning, Sonia?
Doing great, Chip.
Good. It's time to be thinking about next year's crop and putting it in the ground. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that it's already that time of year. So listened to a really great conversation this morning with Sam Turner and Jim Hedrick on our early riser session for the Farm Journal Field Days Harvest Edition. And one thing I do want to say, you guys were just talking about COVID-19. Both of them commented on the resiliency of ag throughout COVID-19 when it comes to our input supplies. There were a few interruptions, but really overall, we were pretty well off compared to a lot of industries in terms of our access to a lot of products. But thinking about next year, so you got to have seeds, you got to have chemistry, seeds to plant and chemistry to protect it. One thing that's really great to hear is that the seed supply is stable despite the ratio, despite all the challenges that we saw this year. It looks like we're going to have the corn and soybeans that we need. And on the chemistry side, I thought this was really interesting. You know how we have a lot of weed resistance and problems like that? It's requiring us to plant or to use more than one type of herbicide every year. So, you know, you could use a mix of 8 herbicides in 2 years in a corn-soybean rotation. And what that means is our demand is not crazy high for just one chemical anymore, which means we're going to have stable supplies and chemicals because we have it spread across a whole lot of different kinds. So also a really great thing to hear. On the fertilizer side, nitrogen especially is looking at some multi-year lows, so it's a good time to be locking in not only your fall applications, but spring applications. Potassium is also low. Phosphorus is the one that's high. It's $100 to $120 more than what we saw this spring, and there's a lot of uncertainty with it right now with some lawsuits and issues going on globally. So
All right, Sonia.
Keep an eye on. We don't know what it's going to do.
Good stuff. Thank you, Sonia. That's Sonia Begum, Farm Journal. We've got Senator Moran up next. Corn herbicides are only as good as their active ingredient, or AI, components, and some are better than others. I'm joined today by Steve Gomm. He is the corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Steve, what consideration should growers make when they are choosing their next corn herbicide?
Sure. First and foremost, consider that not all herbicides provide the same level of value. And while input cost is definitely a factor, growers should think about the spectrum of weeds they need to control, the length of residual they need, the application flexibility based on their program, and then certainly the potential return on investment is important as well.
I love that ROI. Does it pay to go premium?
Well, cheaper options may lack thorough testing and company backing, Chip, and can be made up of older technologies where some weeds may have already developed resistance to. Bicyclopyrone is a Syngenta exclusive AI for Acuron corn herbicide, which has been tested in more than 1,000 trials and proven to provide built-in burn down, greater consistency, powerful weed control, and the longest lasting residual, all with proven crop safety.
Okay, this is interesting, and I'm going to try to say it. Bicyclopyrone, what makes it so special?
Well, let me use this analogy. In every sport, okay, there's an MVP, someone who not only performs great on their own, but also raises the level of performance of those around them. Bicyclopyrone is our MVP in Acuron. When it's combined with the other active ingredients, there's three of them, it just delivers a higher level of weed control more consistently with multiple effective sites of action. And better weed control means more sunlight, nutrients, and water are available for the growing corn crop, which for Acuron leads to higher yield potential, 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide.
All right. Good stuff. Thank you so much, Steve. That was Steve Gomm. He is the corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, talking to us about the value of bicyclopyrone and what it brings to Acuron and why this effective weed control is so important. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels per acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator at findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials. Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. That's a lot of corn. Exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we use all this corn right here in the U.S.? POET is working hard to achieve nationwide E15, which will generate the demand necessary to use up ever-increasing corn yields, increasing the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15% would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's the same as doubling exports, and that's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unify around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag. Your operation is teeming with data points, and managing that information can be tough. There's one agricultural platform that converts data points to profit. A subscription to AGI SureTrack gives your data a place to connect. Whether it's production costs or equipment performance, machine data or payroll, deploying an easy-to-use platform moves your operation forward. See what the future of ag looks like, all for free. Your AGI SureTrack dealer or territory rep is ready to help. Visit AGISureTrack.com/connect to schedule a demo or start your free trial today.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM. Say, Chip.
Yes.
Do you think you can get Senator Moran to clear up the Kansas panhandle controversy for us a little bit? Because I've still got
no
it in my head. That
controversy.
Swear I read somewhere they annexed part of Missouri, like a 20-mile strip.
No.
Maybe that's wrong, though. Could that be right? I think that's
false.
Right.
It's false.
Fake news?
Fake news, yes.
The senator would know if anyone would. He may be calling from the panhandle right now.
He's not calling from the panhandle of Kansas.
We don't know that.
I will guarantee it. Let's bring him in right now, Senator Jerry Moran from Kansas. Senator, welcome back to AgriTalk.
I almost hung up because if you're going to ask me a question about Kansas history, I should know the answer. And I've never heard of the Strip or the Panhandle.
That's right. That's right. I don't know where he comes up with this stuff, Senator.
What a senator would do in this circumstance is tell his staff, hey, we need to do some research. Fill me in. I need to know.
Excellent. Excellent. See, we do that too. Tune in next time when the senator will tell us about the panhandle of Kansas. Great. Great tease, Senator. Thank you.
Oh, shoot.
You're welcome.
All right. All right. Senator, I want to talk about the elections, but I got to bring up some sad news first because I know that you were a close friend of Dr. Barry Flinchbaugh. Our condolences to you and, as we said yesterday afternoon, to the Flinchbaugh family, K-State family. Just a big loss, not just for Kansas, but for the country.
Absolutely. Dr. Flinchbaugh was a great friend. I met him 30-plus years ago when I called him on the phone and to ask him about a Kansas tax policy issue. I said this in my statement, there's probably nobody that outside my family that I enjoy spending time with more so than Barry Flinchbaugh. Just a delightful person, interesting, funny, witty. I also had a practice of joining his class unannounced. So I would put on a K-State sweatshirt, put on a K-State cap, wear my purple, and show up in his class of ag policy. And at the opportune time, at least what I thought was an opportune time, try to interrupt his class. There's usually about 250 students in that class. The best one was he was critiquing his students, complaining a bit about their performance on their test, to which my response was, but professor, if we had a great teacher, we'd have done a lot better. And it just went, I don't know whether it went up or down from there, but it was that kind of a relationship. But I mean, while that makes us smile, his straightforwardness, his telling the truth as he saw it, not sugar-coated, not partisan, not picking sides in a political battle, but just telling us about what the consequences are of decisions we make in Washington, D.C., and what it means to farmers, what it meant to ranchers, what it meant to the agricultural economy. And I also would say that so many of my staff are Barry Flinchbaugh proteges, are his students. Yeah. He was probably our greatest recommender and provider of interns in our office. And there is a real legacy, not just in the Moran world, but in agriculture with people who have, in a sense, sat at the foot of Barry Flinchbaugh and learned from him not only about agriculture and economics, but about life and character and the things that really matter.
Well, yeah, his enthusiasm for teaching, Senator, it was, I mean, he viewed his job as an opportunity and a challenge to educate, and it was inspiring. I had many opportunities to sit and talk with Barry, and I never came away disappointed from a conversation with Dr. Barry Flinchbaugh.
Not at all. I just had an email from the dean indicating that he Barry Flinchbaugh had told the dean that he wanted to die teaching his students, wanted to be in the classroom. The point was that he was in the classroom last Wednesday. Yeah. And I love that. He always told me he was going to keep teaching as long as he felt as if he was doing his job well. And the thing, while I was indicating he was critiquing his students for their performance on a quiz or a test, what he always told me was that if his students did poorly on an exam, it was because he wasn't teaching them correctly. He was making the mistake. And I saw it where he loved his kids, where he cared about them. He helped, in a sense, raise them. And then when I was in his classroom and just knowing many of his former students, the respect he had for his students was reciprocated by the respect they had for him now in his late 70s.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's too
bad. It's nice
bad.
Of you to remember him on AgriTalk. I appreciate that greatly. And all of us are of concerned course. About his wife, Kathy, and family and the ag community.
Yeah, yeah. Very good, very good. Senator, by the time the polls close in Kansas, we're going to you're going to have a new partner in the Senate from the state. Which way is it leaning?
Well, first, I would use that as an opportunity to express my gratitude and pay the honors to Senator Roberts, who such a longtime leader in agriculture, the only person to ever serve as chairman of the House and Senate Agriculture Committees.
Yep.
And so, Kansans will be losing a great leader in agriculture and otherwise come January with the election that's occurring today. My best guess is, and I'm a terrible election prognosticator, and of course, polls have misled us so often that we're all skeptical of what we read and hear. But I would think it is that the outcome is in the Republican favor in Kansas. While our state is changing as the country is, and particularly changing in the suburbs, I would expect Dr. Marshall to perform well tonight, and will perform well today. You're right. I'll have a new colleague, and probably on Election Day, probably not the time to try to persuade anybody of anything. Please go vote is the only persuasion I would make. But I would expect this one, and it's important from a number of points of view. But I would point out that from a Moran and Republican point of view, the Senate is at stake, and it's a very important from that perspective that a place like Kansas that we stay in the red column.
Yeah, yeah. I said it during the news with Davis that I'm watching the Senate, the race for control of the Senate, more closely than I'm watching the race for the White House, Senator. I think if we would see the trifecta with Biden in the White House, Democrat control of the Senate, and Democrat retaining control of the House, you lose the opportunity for checks and balances, don't you?
Absolutely. And I hope there's a set of voters who, regardless of how they're voting in a presidential race, see the importance of having checks and balances in a House that is most likely, I think, to remain in a strong Democrat majority. So the U.S. House, my assumption is, stays majority Democrat. Don't know what the outcome of the presidency race is, but having a Republican Senate in the setting in which there could be a Democrat president, a Democrat majority House, even if you're a Democrat, I don't know that people believe this anymore, but there's still value to having some division. It's important for us to play some checks and balances, whatever the administration is.
Right, right.
And I guess I would also say that, if talking about agriculture in particular, if Biden becomes the president, if Vice President Biden becomes President Biden, I think the issues that are near and dear and hugely important to rural communities and to agriculture producers, it will be a different world, and it's important, particularly in that case, to have a Republican majority Senate to try to play counterbalance.
Right, right. I agree. I completely agree with that assessment right there, Senator. There's going to be, as you mentioned, Senator Roberts is not running. That means that there's going to be a new chairman of the Senate Ag Committee. What's your thought on who that will be?
Well, if the Republicans retain the majority, I feel pretty comfortable in predicting that Senator John Bozeman, my friend from Arkansas, becomes the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee. And I would also make the same prediction if we're not in the majority, if Republicans are not in the majority, then I think you could expect the ranking member, Debbie Stabenow, to become the chairman. John Bozeman is one of my closest friends in the Senate. I welcome that. And he has a heart for rural America and for agriculture producers. And we've never had problems. John is the kind of person who wants to make sure that there's not the fights that sometimes arise between the Plains and the South. And that's something when we are in such a minority as those of us who care about agriculture, we can't fight among ourselves and have a result.
Right, right. Well, you all heard what the senator said. Get out there and vote. Get it done. Today is the day. Senator, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Senator.
Great to be with you. I'm going to take my break tomorrow, and we're going to start a conservation tour in Northwest Kansas, and I'm going to spend my time with farmers and ranchers and looking at and we're going to have the chief of NRCS
you
out our way.
See. There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Nationwide E15 would generate demand for increasing corn yields. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol would result in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's the same as doubling exports, and that's 2 billion reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more about supporting Nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, boy, nice bounce going on in corn and soybeans.
Yeah, the soy markets, they're trading solidly to the upside, double-digit gains in many of the soybean contracts this morning. Soy oil is actually leading the complex, and so it lends me to believe that, the corrective phase has run its course, and we found some buyers on the pullback here. But it also wouldn't surprise me if we see some sort of demand news develop out of this. And so maybe a flash sale would come tomorrow or the following day, and we'll have to see if that pans out or not.
Yeah, it certainly is acting that way. I don't think there's any question about it. The wheat market building a little bit on yesterday's gains.
A little bit. That one, it's going to need some demand news, specifically from China. And, the talk out there that maybe the Chinese demand will build. Now they're talking about China shutting off Australian wheat exports. But we need to see some results. And I think that's why it's a little bit slower buyer interest today so far.
All right. The cattle market backing off.
Yeah, quiet morning, really. I think we need to see strength in the box beef develop into some strength in the cash cattle market for any real sustained buyer interest in that market to develop. That won't come until later in the week, obviously. Hog market so far this morning favoring the upside, but all in all, it's pretty quiet in there as well.
Yeah, it's nice to see that hog market moving to the upside, though, Beach, because we had that nice recovery from the lows yesterday in hogs. If we would have failed and not seen some follow through today, it would have been very discouraging. Thanks, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now. Your operation is teeming with data points, and managing that information can be tough. There's one agricultural platform that converts data points to profit. A subscription to AGI SureTrack gives your data a place to connect. Whether it's production costs or equipment performance, machine data or payroll, deploying an easy-to-use platform moves your operation forward. See what the future of ag looks like, all for free. Your AGI SureTrack dealer or territory rep is ready to help. Visit AGISureTrack.com/connect to schedule a demo or start your free trial today.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize Corteva for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right. That's Election Day by the Replacements. Davis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I did not know that. I had to be told that this was coming because that one is John Harith and Joe Stackler digging deep right there for that piece of bump music. That's
deep
for sure.
Cuts on Election Day. Yeah.
That's right. Okay. Real quick, the senator was talking about what he's going to be doing on Thursday, and he's going to be out on his 15th annual conservation on Thursday. And what he does is he gets out and he goes to these different conservation spots out across Kansas, delivers a conservation message. We've got Hoxie Feed Yard at 8:30 on Thursday, 10:30, Little Jerusalem Badlands State Park, 12:45, Smoky Valley Ranch, 2:30, Ducks Unlimited Wetland Reserve and Easement Project. That's in Colby, where that project is, and then the Water Technology Farm at Northwest Technical College in Goodland happens at 3:00. So very busy Conservation Day for Senator Moran coming on Thursday. All right, let's get to the conversation right now, Election Day conversation with Scott Schellady. He is at the Cow Guy on Twitter, joins us right now. Scott, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a while. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing just fine. You've got a busy day. I've seen your face a couple of places already this morning.
Yeah, it's going to be an easy 12 hours, maybe 15, and tomorrow's starting to stack up that way as well. But, you know, maybe someday I'll get good at it and actually make some money doing it.
Well, I sure appreciate you making time for us, Scott. The no enthusiasm problem. Factor, how important is it in this election?
It's about 600 points, today important. It's 400 points yesterday important on the Dow. I mean, look, yeah, I'm not a rabid Republican by any means, but you know what? You can't ask me to, not believe, my lion eyes, right? I mean, this parallels with a lot of what we thought was, or at least what I saw happening this summer. You know, those aren't riots. Those are peaceful protesters. That's not a big rally. Pay attention to the polls. So all I can really trust, Chip, is what I see. And I think over the last 5 days, the market's waking up to that. And I think that's why you're seeing these moves, at least in the equity markets, because I talk to the smartest guys in the world every day, all of them on Wall Street, and they're now officially all younger than I am. And all of them are probably smarter than I am. But they've deluded themselves into believing that it doesn't matter who's elected, the government's going to have to print money, and there's going to be a lot of free money out there, and it's going to somehow find its way back to the stock market. Well, that's partly true. But you know what? One of those candidates is going to find its way back easier than the other, who's got a $4.4 trillion tax plan. So you can't ignore that fact. It's like saying people, let's buy some stocks that got, some dividend stocks, and don't worry about the stock going to zero. You're still going to get your dividend, kind of a thing. So right. I think that we're finally waking up to the fact that there's some real enthusiasm out there. It's definitely caught fire in the last 7 days, maybe five, if you want to go on the short side of that. And they're telling you that through the markets, and everybody's trying to blame it on something else. And I just, keep it simple, stupid. Don't disbelieve what you see. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And the messaging that is happening out there right now, my gosh, Scott, let's talk a little bit about the messaging. With this question, do you have a message for Maxine Waters?
Yeah. Look how well that did for Madeleine Albright. How's that?
Yeah.
There's a special place in hell for those women that don't vote for Hillary.
Right.
And then she's now doing her best Madeleine Albright. She's Madeleine Albright for Halloween. She's doing the same thing, but making it black people instead of women. And I think it's unconscionable. And, I'm not a rabid Republican by any means, right? I voted for a Democrat before for president. But I come from an agricultural background, right? If it's raining, we don't go outside. You can't lie to me and tell me it's not raining. And they're trying to tell me it's not raining, and I can see damn well it's raining. So that's what the problem is. And so they're throwing these same plays. It didn't work for Madeleine Albright. It's not going to work for Maxine Waters. We got 47 months versus 47 years. We've got what your lion eyes are seeing today versus the five or six people honking their horns at Biden rallies. If I didn't have any other media except for what I could see, I wouldn't even think there's a contest going on. But
right,
because you keep get beaten up over the head with these polls, you keep doubting yourself.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. I hear you. What does Europe think about what's happening here?
Well, I was over there for the last election for Donald Trump. And they had that Trump syndrome like we still have here, where everybody's afraid to say it, right? He's like, Trump's like Neil Diamond. Everybody loves it, but nobody admits it.
Right.
So they would all quietly mumble under my breath once they heard my American accent. Boy, oh boy, I wish we had a leader like you guys have, Donald Trump, right? Everybody, that was very common theme. Now they see what's happening over here, and they just can't believe a lot of them. And I have my finger on the pulse because I've got a British passport. They can't believe that, they don't get the polls like we do. And by the way, a gentleman in London put a $5 million bet on last night that Trump will, be reelected. So if that's not voting with your feet, I don't know what is. Look, and because I have my finger on that pulse, you know what? I said this on the television this morning. every major Western leader has been blamed for coronavirus.
Yeah.
I mean, is there, do you have any new material, please? Because that's been used before. All right. So every major Western leader has been blamed for it. So what's your next thing you got? And they don't have anything.
Right. Right. Well, Scott, I'm going to make you one guarantee for tomorrow. Okay. And that is that it's going to start the same way that it did today. And that is with the sun rising in the east. That's an important thing for people to remember, isn't it?
Right. The cows need feeding.
Yep.
It'll all be okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
whomever wins, you know, he's the pilot of your airplane. And if you wish him ill, that means you want your own airplane to crash. And that's just not logical. It's insane.
That's right. Talk about the time that you did spend in London and the perspective that it gives you on the fact that the sun is going to rise and the cows are going to get fed tomorrow.
Yeah, I wrote about that this last week in my editorial here in the Northwest Indiana Times. The first thing is that I think we have such heated rhetoric because we're not really allowed to talk about the things that really matter, sex, religion, and politics. That's all they talk about in Europe. So they actually have a discourse and they test their own hypotheses and they come away knowing more than they maybe did before they had their talk. And it doesn't build up the steam like the pressure cooker we have here in the States, where you can only talk about your daughter not making the volleyball team, or if your son, did he get the best history teacher in 12th grade, right? That's really all people talk about at these dinner parties. Well, you take that one step further and you walk around these towns. You know, I owned 5 or 6 homes when I was there over the 16 years. The youngest house I bought was 120 years old, and the oldest was 500 years old. The church I got married in was 1,100 years old. So you're standing on the altar. I mean, how many people got married there, right? And then the house I had that was 500 years old, I would come back from a bad day at work, and I'd look up at the beams in the bedroom because they were all exposed, and you could see the axe notches from the guy 500 years ago that was building that house. And you think to yourself, gosh, I must be, you know, I'm sure there was no medicine. He had a lot of sickness and a bunch of kids die. And did he ever really get to shower with warm water? And how hard was his life? And how really bad is mine compared to what that guy had to endure? So it's terribly humbling when you think about it that way. And older cultures kind of relax a little bit and they don't get so worked up because they know that, you know what? Yes, you can make a difference. Try to make things better than it was when you got here. But at the end of the day, you still want to have a good time, and it's not worth ruining your life for because you have some sort of platform that you want to jam down everybody's throat.
Right.
You walk around the corner and it says, here stood, you know, St. Mary's Hospital till 500, you know, AD, and then it burnt down, but they built a new one, which is still there right now, that was built in 550. And you say, oh my gosh, this was built 1,500 years ago.
Right.
So it's terribly humbling when you have those older cultures, and it makes you kind of relax a little bit and say, hey, I can do a lot. I can make a lot of changes, but in the big picture, you know, I'm still the guy that's swinging the axe trying to make that beam.
That's right. That's awesome perspective, Scott. And with that in mind, what do you expect tomorrow? And what I'm referring to, of course, is what's going to happen in the cities tonight, tomorrow.
Well, I mean, it beggars belief that they think that if you know Biden wins, that Republicans are going to storm these big cities and break windows and loot. Yeah. I mean, that's just it's insane. I think Trump will win. I do. I have to go with my gut. You know, you keep telling me it's not raining, but it just looks like it's raining to me. So I'm going to go with that. And at the same time, if he does win and it's big, yeah, there will definitely be some problems. I mean, it's just the way it is. That's how, you know, because we can't talk about those important. We can't talk about meaningful things anymore. Everybody's got to be so politically correct that we do end up just talking about whether or not, you know, your kid made the softball team or not. And so these things just get shoved under the rug until we have these massive bursts because we can't really talk about an event. So that's going to continue to be the case. So if Trump wins, yes, we're going to have there's going to be problems.
Yeah. Scott, I always enjoy these conversations. Thank you so much, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a good day. And the sun is going to come up and those cows are going to need feeding.
That's right. That's awesome perspective. Thank you, sir. Scott Shalady at the Cow Guy out there on Twitter. It's at Scott the Cow Guy group is what just check him out. Some very, very good perspectives out there. Davis, one of the things that concerns me is that there are going to be riots tonight, tomorrow, regardless of who wins. and it'll probably be the same group rioting.
That, I'm afraid so, yes.
I'm afraid that those plans have probably already been made. We've got Michael Langemeyer from Purdue University up next right here on AgriTalk.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Little Jimmy for you. Good work, guys. Mm-hmm. All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. That's Davis Michelson. And one thing for sure, Davis, the weather is not going to be in the way of getting out and casting your vote today.
I like
look
the sound
at the
of that.
Entire country. It's incredible. I mean, this is a window open kind of day here in Northeast Iowa.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not quite there yet, but maybe I'll open the windows later. I don't know.
Love a little fresh air in. All right.
There's people out there, Chip. They could just come crawling in.
A little fresh air. You want a breath of fresh air? Let's talk some optimism in the ag economy. How do you like that? We've got Michael Langemeyer. He is a professor in the ag economy department there at Purdue University. He joins us right now. Michael, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Pretty good. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. So the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer, new record high. This is pretty amazing to me. 183 on the barometer, Michael. What's driving that?
It's really remarkable given the fact that we hit really low points in April and May. The index was below 100 in April. Now it stands at 183, a new record high. Both the index of current conditions and the index of future expectations are up. Well, when you look at the index of current conditions in particular, that was up more than the index of future expectations. You've got higher prices, particularly soybean prices, you know, even compared to earlier this year, of course. You've got positive trade news for the most part, and then you have the CFAP2 payments. I think you combine all of those things, and it's no wonder that we saw more optimism in October compared to previous months.
Well, I tell you what, Michael, when you go back, as you were saying earlier, even just this summer, June, July, I think people were wondering where their cash flow was going to come from. And that cash flow problem, for the most part, not for everybody, I know, but for the most part, that's been cured up.
Yeah, it was really ugly, of course, just like you said. We were really wondering how we were going to come up with the working capital to make term debt payments.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at a situation where most people should be able to make principal payments without too much problem and probably even be able to replace the machinery that they haven't been able to replace for several years.
Did you ask that question, Michael, on machinery?
We've been asking questions related to farm capital every month. And one of the ways we encapsulate that is in the Farm Capital Investment Index. That was at 82 in October, and the main point there is it was at a record. And so what that means is there's a lot more optimism regarding investing in depreciable machinery than there's been in the life of the survey, which started in late 2015.
Right, right. You normally ask the expectations on land values question. Was that question included again?
Oh, definitely. That's been asked every month for the last several months just to see what's going on. And certainly people are more optimistic, particularly short-term, looking at land values. 27% think we're going to have higher land values in the next year, and only 9% think we're going to have lower land values. At first glance, that 9%, you say, what are these people thinking? Because, because earnings look like they're stronger. That really hasn't budged. There's a group that are pretty pessimistic with regard to land values, regardless of when you ask this question. But the key point there is there's certainly a lot more people that are thinking that land values are going to increase. Moreover, one of the questions that was extremely interesting this time is we've been asking questions about cash rents in 2021. And with the stronger profitability or net return prospects in 2020, the percent of people that think cash rents are going to go up in 2021 went from 8% in September, only 8% thought cash rents were going to go up in 2021, to 38%.
Oh,
that speaks volumes about optimism.
Yeah, it certainly does. That is a huge move. Huge move. Wow.
Yeah, that's a huge move. That's by far the largest move we've seen in that question in the history of the survey.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Let's talk about how producers feel about their operation today versus October of 2019.
Yes, one of the questions we have been asking, and this is also one of the questions that really popped out when I was crunching the numbers this month, is we have a question that's incorporated in the index of current conditions that basically says as follows. Would you say that your farm operation today is financially better off, worse off, or about the same compared to a year ago? That's still only at 25% in terms of think that they're better off, but that's been hovering right around 10% for pretty much the life of the survey. It did reach 16% one time historically, but that was a huge percent that think their operation is better off today compared to last year, compared to previous months when we've asked the same question.
Yeah, that's pretty phenomenal. What is the so what do you think this tells us going forward, Michael? Obviously, the elections are going to play some sort of a role in what the attitude or what the barometer is going to tell us coming out for November, right?
Yeah, and we're going to ask some of the same questions we asked in October in both November and December, so we can get a gauge on the impact of the election on some of the
good
optimism.
Good. That's a good plan right there, boy. And, you know, the Farm Journal Pulse poll still has about 85% of farmers supporting President Trump. That year-to-year comparison, even though it's just 25%, boy, that tells us a lot about why farmers generally are supporting Trump, I believe. I think that's got something to do with it. Michael, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for making time. Yeah.
You're welcome.
All right. That is Professor Michael Langemeyer from Purdue University there in the Ag Economy Department. Wow. We started the show with the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. We wrap it up with some bump music, Jimmy playing the national anthem.
Yeah.
It's not just an opportunity. It is a duty. We've got more than 100 million people have already voted. We're going to have record turnout. Don't be left behind. Make your voice heard. Get out there and vote. Hey, come back this afternoon. Steve Johnson, Iowa State University, right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.